Is your head spinning with everything happening in the world around you? Do you need some moral sanity and spiritual clarity? You've come to the right place.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. Welcome to a brand new week on the Line of Fire broadcast. And today and tomorrow, we are going to have some special broadcasts for you. And then Wednesday, God willing, Thursday, Friday, back to our normal schedule. So don't pick up the phone, sit back, enjoy the broadcast. As you were listening to this, everything going well, I should be enjoying some fun family vacation with all of our kids and grandkids together, having some fun in Maryland and Virginia or somewhere on the planet. And in the future, there'll be some days when I'm traveling overseas and it's not possible for me to be broadcasting at that moment, and we'll have some guest hosts. We haven't done that a lot in the past, in fact, only a couple of times so far. And when I ask folks on social media what their preference was, like when I'm traveling overseas, do they enjoy the shows where I get up in the middle of the night, literally, and do the broadcast so I can do a live broadcast, and they'll go back to ministry schedule overseas where I am, or do they like pre-recorded shows or guest hosts? Whenever I can be live, that's obviously the consensus, and that's what we do our best to do. But I've had a few things I wanted to talk to you about, and I'm going to do that on today's broadcast and do my best to help you come to a place of clarity, of sanity, and of rest. Can I give you a simple principle? I got a lot of things I want to talk about and some controversial things. Me? Controversial? Yes, some controversial things. But let me say this first. There's a really, really simple principle to live by, and that is major on the majors. Major on the majors. Yes, there's a lot of doctrinal division in the body. Yes, there are many groups that claim to have the exclusive truth. Yes, there are many groups that say if you're not part of their group, you're not fully blessed or you're not even saved. Yes, there are church splits and denominational splits. Yes, there are many important issues that through the centuries have defined the body. And yes, many of the letters of the New Testament were written specifically to address difficult issues and doctrinal deviations and wrong practices. So this has always been with us. Old Testament, New Testament, warnings against deception, against false prophets, against false teachers. The problem is, with so many different claims to truth, how do we know for sure that every last thing we believe is perfectly accurate? Well, how about instead majoring on the majors and let other things fall into place? You don't have to know necessarily the meaning of one of the most difficult verses in the Bible that you might be studying. Now, if you're writing a commentary on it, like I have on some books, well, then you've got to do your best to come to a conclusion. But otherwise, you don't necessarily have to know every detail, and what about this prophetic thing? How is it going to unfold? Major on the majors. Spend quality time with God. Yeah, makes a big difference. Pray, share your heart with Him. Read through the scriptures. Where you don't understand something, make a note of it to come back to. If you have some extra time to study, fine, but just get in the Word. Seek to love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Stay away from things that you know are destructive and harmful and sinful. Do your best to be a blessing in someone else's life. Share your faith as you have opportunity. Help those who are doing the work of the gospel. Major on the majors. Let the other dust settle. I just feel for many of you listening, it's so important to hear that. And with everything happening in the world, what about them? What about God? We come to you and we pray that your name would be hallowed in the earth. Your kingdom come, your will be done.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. For those new to the broadcast or for those who could use a little refresher, when we talk about revolution, we're not talking about the violent overthrow of the government. We're not talking about hatred, intimidation, anger. No, we're talking about overcoming evil with good. We're talking about overcoming hatred with love. We're talking about overcoming lies with truth. We're talking about the power of the gospel, the power of the Spirit to transform us, and then we go as transformed people and transform our world. And if there's an anger, it's an anger against the devil. It's an anger against sin because we care about the people who are being hurt and who are being destroyed. So it is a joy to be with you on the broadcast today. I want to talk to you about a bunch of different things. If you read my article last week about President Obama aligning himself with terrorists, I was not the only voice. I was one of many voices saying to Mr. Carter and to former President Carter and former Irish President Mary Robinson, who I'm not familiar with in terms of her work or her presidency, but I took great exception, along with many others, to their basically throwing Israel under the bus, blaming Israel for the current conflict, putting a war crimes charge much more on Israel than on Hamas, and saying that Hamas somehow was a legitimate political actor, and therefore that Israel and the West should no longer see Hamas as a terrorist organization. Now, please understand, no terrorist organization simply exists just to bring about terror. There's some cause they're fighting for. It's maybe a totally misguided cause, or maybe a good cause that they're fighting for in a totally misguided way. But either way, they have some kind of goal. So obviously, Hamas has the goal of expelling the Jews from historic Palestine, which of course is before that Israel, saying they have no right to be there. And if it's killing them, expelling them, cleansing the land of every Jew, and then retaking it, and then saying it is all for the Palestinians. That's their goal. Now, along the way, they'll do humanitarian work. Along the way, they'll do educational work. But the fact is, they are radical Muslims, and the fact is, they are committed to the violent destruction of Israel. So I took very strong exception to their piece, former Presidents Carter and Robinson. If you didn't read my article, go to AskDrBrown.org. Just check on latest article, and you'll see it there. Well, listen to what Alan Dershowitz had to say. Yes, I don't agree with him on certain points. He is much more liberal in many ways than I am. As far as his stance for Israel, in many ways, I have found him to be tremendously articulate. Of course, he is a brilliant lawyer who can speak for himself. So, I am reading from a report on Newsmax.com, and he was on Newsmax TV's America's Forum. This was last week on Thursday. He said that former President Jimmy Carter is, quote, an all-out supporter of Hamas, end quote. If his advocacy turns into material support, he will be committing a crime. This is according to Harvard law professor and legal analyst Alan Dershowitz. Quote, Jimmy Carter wants the United States and the European community to recognize Hamas, to legitimate it. It's against the law in the United States, even if you're a former president. It's against the law to provide material support to a listed terrorist organization, and Jimmy Carter's coming awfully close to that line. Carter, Dershowitz said, is calling for the recognition of Hamas, saying the terrorist organization should be seen by the world as an equal with Israel. According to Dershowitz, quote, it's as if one would want to recognize and legitimate the mafia or Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. But leave it to Jimmy Carter, he said. Dershowitz also blamed Carter for advising then PLO leader Yasser Arafat to reject peace deals that would have changed the course of life in Gaza and the West Bank. Quote, Jimmy Carter advised Yasser Arafat to reject the offer of statehood in 2000-2001, saying that if he did it, he'd be killed. So when you look at Jimmy Carter, he has blood on his hands for having advised Arafat to turn down the deal. Continuing with the quote, can you imagine how much better the world would have been if Arafat had accepted the offer of ending the occupation of the Gaza, of ending the 95% of the occupation of the West Bank? But Jimmy Carter was giving advice to Arafat at the time, and we know what Arafat did. He turned down the peace offer. Jimmy Carter has a lot of answering to do. There are a lot of people who would be alive today if Jimmy Carter had advised Arafat to accept the deal rather than to object to it. Wow. Strong words by Alan Dershowitz. He also pointed out that the Egyptian brokered ceasefire between the Palestinians and Israel that began Tuesday, saying Israel has achieved its goal of destroying dozens of Hamas tunnels used by the Palestinians to launch attack. Excuse me, he gave his opinion about this. Quote, there was a plan for Hamas to use all 40 tunnels on Rosh Hashanah. So this would have been September of this year, the Jewish New Year, this year, the end of September, and have a massive attack hoping to kill thousands of Israeli civilians, and the destruction of the tunnels may have prevented this massacre, which would have resulted in an all-out war, obviously, in the Middle East, and it may have taken close to 70 Israeli soldiers, this massacre, but if that report is correct, then everything Israel did was completely proportional. Israel has finished its job, especially Hamas has been weakened, and on he goes. So, according to Alan Dershowitz, former President Carter has blood on his hands. You say, but look, I'm a peace lover. This war talk, Dr. Brown, you sound militant. You sound like a warmonger. I mean, Mike, don't you want to see peace? Isn't it about the cross? You know, I've been hearing that here and there. It's not a predominant voice, but here and there on Facebook from other believers. Number one, our whole focus is always people getting right with God through the cross. That's always first. The blood of Jesus is the ultimate solution for all human problems, period. That is the ultimate answer and solution. Being cleansed by his blood, turning from sin, and coming into right relationship with God. That being said, we live in this world, do we not? Is it wrong to have police? Would you rather have a society in which there are no police? Because sometimes police have to arrest someone, and sometimes police may get into gunfire with someone and have to shoot that person. Should we not have prisons for criminals? Should we have no army? If America was invaded and is happening in Islamic countries, every man was told, line up your daughters and surrender them to us. We're going to rape them, and they're going to become sex slaves of the soldiers here. Do you say, oh, wait, hang on. I've got another girl in the back room. Let me bring her out. Is that what you do? Is that the right response? Didn't Jesus say if you persecuted one city, flee to another? And then if it becomes issues of national security, then do we not fight? Was it wrong for America and the Allies to stop the Nazis? Was that wrong? So, listen, if we were a perfect Christian nation, the whole nation was Christian, living by the Sermon on the Mount, and you wanted to make a case for complete pacifism, although I don't believe that's what the Sermon on the Mount is talking about on a national level, so about individual retaliation and things like that, but or individual vindictiveness. But let's just say it was. And we were all just going to pray and believe God for his miraculous intervention. Then that's a whole different story. We're not there. And Israel has every right to defend itself and to repeat. Come on, I don't have right up to the moment news in front of me as I'm sharing these things with you. But think of it. If Israel is looking to the north, if Israel is looking to the southwest, if Israel is looking to the east, if Israel is looking to the south, these different directions, and they are surrounded at different times by violent, radical Muslims who want to kill them, and they have the ability to defend themselves, why are you expecting Israel as a nation to now somehow live by a Christian principle and just say, okay, we're going to turn the other cheek, which again, Jesus was not talking about that when it came to a national level of defense. It just wasn't being addressed there at all. So it's a strange thing to me. It's a strange thing when we're talking about the security of a nation, of our number one ally in the Middle East, and for me, family, as a Jew, family there, to talk about Israel's defense against Islamic terrorists, when we would do the same thing all the time. I'm not being militaristic. My heart, listen, I want to see the terrorists saved. And I grieve. I constantly call for prayer for the Palestinians to be delivered from the evil of terrorism and the evil of corrupt regimes. But the idea that we're getting militaristic, no, I'm not saying, come on, no. But of course Israel has the right to defend itself just as we would. And often that is saving many, many other lives from atrocities. Got a very interesting letter to read when we come back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Line of Fire. Boy, what a privilege I have coming your way, speaking to you on the airwaves, interacting with you in so many other ways. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your life, part of your service to God, part of your ministry. And those of you who differ with me, I don't know if you listen because it gets your blood boiling. I don't know if you listen because you're learning as you're listening or trying to see how wrong I am, how to refute me. Years past, there were some radio shows I listened to. I really differed. And when the theme music would start, I'd just start to get agitated. So I understand that most listening listen with agreement and appreciation. Some listen just out of curiosity, like, who is this guy? And others listen like, ugh. But I'm glad you're listening. I'm glad you are listening. Okay, a few different items I wanted to talk to you about today. This is one I've had on my desk for a few days, but I want to share it with you today. It's dated July 28th, 2014. It's by Chloe Valderill. It's called To the Students for Justice in Palestine, A Letter from an Angry Black Woman. Now, many of my African-American friends and listeners are very upset that homosexual activists have hijacked the civil rights movement, and they say that gay rights are now the new civil rights movement, and many of my black Christian friends say you got no right hijacking that, and the comparisons are deeply invalid. Well, this is a letter to Students for Justice in Palestine. And she said, you do not have the right to invoke my people's struggle for your shoddy purposes. Now, certainly, there have been Palestinians who have suffered many ways before they were known as Palestinians, Arabs who have suffered in the conflict with Israel. And again, my position remains the same, that they're suffering primarily because of wrong choices, bad choices by their leadership to this day. Let's hear what she has to say. The student organization Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, is prominent on many college campuses. Again, this is a letter from an angry black woman. It says, you do not have the right to invoke my people's struggles for your, Palestinian, your shoddy purposes. So she said, SJP is prominent on many college campuses preaching a mantra of freeing Palestine. It masquerades as though it were a civil rights group when it is not. Indeed, as an African-American, I am highly insulted that my people's legacy is being pilfered for such a repugnant agenda. It is thus high time to expose its agenda and lay bare some of the fallacies they peddle. If you seek to promulgate the legacy of early Islamic colonialists who raped and pillaged the Middle East, subjugated the indigenous peoples living in the region, and foisted upon them a life of persecution and degradation, you do not get to claim the title freedom fighter. Chloe continues, if you support a racist doctrine of Arab supremacism and wish, as a corollary of that doctrine, to destroy the Jewish state, you do not get to claim that the prejudices you peddle are forms of legitimate resistance. If your heroes are clerics who sit in Gaza, plotting the genocide of a people, who place their children on rooftops in the hopes they'll get blown to bits, who he praises upon their fellow gang members when they succeed in murdering Jewish schoolboys and bombing places of activity where Jews congregate, you do not get to claim that you are some Apollonian advocate of human virtue. You are not. If your activities include grieving over the woefully incompetent performance by Hamas rocketeers and the subsequent millions of Jewish souls who are still alive, whose children were not murdered by their rockets, whose limbs were not torn from them, and whose disembowelment did not come into fruition, you do not get to claim that you stand for justice. You profess to be irreproachable. You are categorically not. She writes, if your idea of a righteous cause entails targeting and intimidating Jewish students on campus, arrogating their history of exile and return and fashioning it in your own likeness, you do not get to claim that you do so in the name of civil liberty and freedom of expression. You do not get to champion regimes that murder, torture, and persecute their own people, deliberately keep them impoverished, embezzle millions of dollars from them, and claim you are pro-Arab. You are not. You do not get to champion a system wherein Jews are barred from purchasing land, traveling in certain areas, and living out such an existence merely because they are Jews, and claim that you are promoting equality for all. You do not get to enable that system by pushing a boycott of Jewish-owned businesses, shops, and entities, and then claim that you are, quote, against apartheid. That is evil. You do not get to justify the calculated and deliberate bombings, beatings, and lynchings of Jewish men, women, and children by referring to such heinous occurrences as part of a noble uprising of the oppressed. That is racism. It is evil. You do not get to pretend as though you and Rosa Parks would have been great buddies in the 1960s. Rosa Parks was a real freedom fighter. Rosa Parks was a Zionist. Coretta Scott King was a Zionist. Philip Randolph was a Zionist. Bayard Rustin was a Zionist. Count Basie was a Zionist. Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. was a Zionist. Indeed, they and many more, I'm not sure if they're supposed to say junior, but it says senior. They and many more men and women signed a letter in 1975 that stated, we condemn the anti-Jewish blacklist. We have fought too long and too hard to root out discrimination from our land, to sit idly while foreign interests import bigotry to America. Having suffered so greatly from such prejudice, we consider most repugnant the efforts by Arab states to use the economic power of their newly acquired oil wealth to boycott business firms that deal with Israel or that have Jewish owners, directors, or executives, and to impose anti-Jewish preconditions for investments in this country. You see, she writes, my people have always been Zionists because my people have always stood for the freedom of the oppressed. So you most certainly do not get to culturally appropriate my people's history for your own. You do not have the right to invoke my people's struggle for your shoddy purposes, and you do not get to feign victimhood in our name. You do not have the right to slander my people's good name and link your cause to that of Dr. King's. Our two causes are diametrically opposed to each other. Your cause is the antithesis of freedom. It has cost hundreds of thousands of lives of both Arabs and Jews. It has separated these people and has fomented animosity between them. It has led to heartache, torment, death, and destruction. It is, of course, your prerogative to continue to utilize platitudes for your cause. You're entirely within your rights to chant words like equality, justice, and freedom fighter. You can keep using those words for as long as you like, but I do not think you know what they mean. Wow. Again, this was to the Students for Justice in Palestine, a letter from an angry black woman. Okay, switching gears. All the time. We get questions about election predestination all the time. Questions about my debates with my dear friend and esteemed colleague, Dr. James White. And along with my recent debates with Dr. White, I've had many debates with Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, but there was one that was kind of the event of all events at the New York City Hilton about 10 years ago. Just immediately before the Mel Gibson movie came out, Who Really Killed Jesus was the name of the debate. Immediately before the Passion of the Christ, the day of the debate, I think it was Newsweek magazine, every newsstand you see, there's a picture of Jesus from that movie. And there it is, Who Really Killed Jesus, the very title we had picked for the debate. Standing room only, 1,000 people, major media coverage. It's not available online. I want to get these two debates to you. They're each $20 plus postage, but today, $25 postage paid, two classic debates. My debate with my friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, Who Really Killed Jesus? What a night that was. And my debate with my esteemed colleague, Dr. James White, on predestination and election. Two debates, $25 postage paid, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978, or straight to the website, askdrbrown.org.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for being with us on the Line of Fire today. I am sharing a bunch of different things that are on my heart that I feel are important. And I started the broadcast, a half hour ago, saying just major on the majors and focus on that. Since then, I've been addressing lots of controversial issues. I want to remind you in everything, though, Jesus is Lord and God sits on the throne. I don't mean that God is orchestrating everything that happens on the earth. I do not believe that when a man rapes a little girl that God orchestrated that. I do not believe that when an ISIS Muslim terrorist chops off someone's head shouting Allahu Akbar that God orchestrated that. I absolutely oppose that very notion that God orchestrates evil. But I absolutely believe that he is Lord and King and sitting on his throne. That in the midst of the chaos in this world, he is working out his divine purposes. I absolutely believe that at any moment, whenever he sees fit, he has the full power and right to intervene. And I absolutely believe that if you commit your life to him, it is safe in his hands. That if you do not get outside of his will, in other words, if you do not go out, say, and get stone cold drunk and get behind the wheel of a car and start driving at 100 miles an hour, that you can think, oh, well, I'm protected. No, you may well kill yourself or kill others. However, if you seek to honor him, if you walk in humility before him, if you seek to do his will and walk within his parameters, you can really trust that nobody, nothing has the power to cut your life one day short. And even if a believer is martyred for the gospel, that is a choice they're making because they're saying, I will not deny Jesus. I don't understand why certain accidents happen to believers. I don't understand why godly people get sick and die and we pray, and then an atheist may get healed miraculously by God and then not even come to faith. I don't have answers for all of that, but what I do know is I am not going to base my faith on what I see around me. I'm going to base my faith on what God has promised. I'm going to base my faith on the goodness of God and know that in his hands I am safe, and I can commit everything I have to him for safekeeping, and I can be absolutely sure if I honor him and seek to please him. I'm not talking about works righteousness and if I fast enough days that God will somehow have mercy on me and accept me into his kingdom, or if I stay on my knees until they're bleeding that he'll accept. No. No such notion. What I'm saying is this. If I seek to do his will, faithful in little, faithful in much. This is what the word says. Faithful in that which belongs to someone else, faithful with your own. Faithful with material things, then faithful with spiritual things. If I am found faithful in his sight, if he wants me to speak to 10 million people, he'll cause that to happen. If he wants me to write a book that shakes the nation, he'll cause that to happen. If he arranged my life in the right way to meet my bride, to meet Nancy, 38 years later of marriage and really 40 years as best friends, our lives are blessed. We've been through challenges and difficulties like everybody else, but she is the absolute choice for my life, and I trust I for her life. God orchestrated that. How he brought that together, where he places you. If you put your trust in him, he will smile on you, and he will cause his purposes for your life to come to pass. And you can entrust everything to him for safekeeping, because there is no demonic power anywhere. There is no devil big enough to thwart the purposes of God for your life. I didn't plan on saying any of that, but there you go. We will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let's go behind the scenes and get some very interesting information that ties in with the Middle East, with Israel, with the Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Harper. Michael Brown, welcome to the Line of Fire on this Monday. Very interesting. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper is a staunch supporter of Israel, and he has urged world leaders to side with Israel, and he has blamed Hamas for the Palestinian casualties, even after apparently Israeli shells hit a UN shelter in Gaza, and then there's debate about what actually happened in some of those situations. He still was blaming Hamas. And there's an article in the National Post, Canadian publication, and here online, that tries to explain why he holds to what he holds to. And he said this. He said he has a problem with liberalism, with a leftist way of thinking that somehow does not see the moral strength of conservatism. And I'll explain. I'm not getting political here, but hear what he has to say. He said, "We understand that the great geopolitical battles against modern tyrants and threats are battles over values. Conservatives must take the moral stand with our allies in favor of the fundamental values of our society, including democracy, free enterprise, and individual freedom." Of course, many liberals would agree with that, but how does this play out with his standing with Israel? The article asks, what's behind Harper's thinking? What are its roots? Why is he so seemingly single-minded? The article says, the questions perplex some Canadians and have spawned a range of theories. Some purport these come under the influence of evangelical leaders who want him to defend Judeo-Christian heritage. Mr. Harper's supporters scoff at the notion as groundless. Others say it's all about domestic politics, raising money from Jewish Canadians for the Conservative Party and securing their vote, and on and on. But a review of Mr. Harper's public remarks and speeches in recent years, as well as interviews with those who know him, paint a different picture. What motivates him? It's about the simplicity of right and wrong, of good and evil. This is his perspective, quote, those forces which have threatened the state of Israel every single day of its existence threaten all of us. Wow. You see, Prime Minister Harper is saying there is a right and wrong in this. Prime Minister Harper is saying the same ones that want to kill Jews and exterminate the Jewish people from Israel or drive them out are also our enemies. And they would be hostile to us if they were within our borders as well. It is more than just an issue of, well, who should have the land? No, it's deeper than that. So for Harper, it's about the complexity of the need to take the right side, Israeli democracy versus Islamist terror. So this is what he said, November 8th, 2010. And by the way, I did not know what was behind his strong standing for Israel. So this is enlightening to me. November 8th, 2010, he delivered a speech in Ottawa about the Holocaust, which, like his 2003 address to the Civitas Group, explains his current policy on Gaza. Quote, history teaches us that anti-Semitism is a tenacious and particularly dangerous form of hatred. And recent events are demonstrating that this hatred is now in resurgence throughout the world. He spoke of how he had visited Auschwitz in 2008, and more recently he had been to Babi Yar, a ravine in Ukraine where the Nazis had massacred Jews over 100,000 in a very short period of time. He said, I knew I was standing in a place where evil, evil at its most cruel, obscene, and grotesque, had been unleashed. Moreover, he said the Holocaust was just one chapter in a long history of anti-Semitism, and the same threats still faced Israel. Quote, yet in contemporary debates that influence the fate of the Jewish homeland, unfortunately, there are those who reject the language of good and evil. They say that the situation is not black and white and that we mustn't choose sides. Wow. Are you getting as much out of this as I am? That's how I feel as well, that there is a right and wrong in this, that there, that the same forces that have wanted to wipe out the Jewish people through the centuries are at work today. And they, those same forces hurt the Palestinians as well, because they do not allow for a rational discussion of what is best for all parties. No, Israel's not blameless. No, Israel's not perfect. We understand that. Yes, Israel could be more civil in different dealings with Palestinians. Yes, Israelis have been guilty of atrocities against Palestinians, but these are all contrary to the ethic. Here. Last week, the Urban Combat Manual for Hamas was found by Israeli soldiers, and the contents have been released, which clearly call for the use of human shields, and clearly say, because Israel does this and this to avoid civilian casualties, we need to exploit that. Well, how about this? This is the IDF, Israel Defense Force, guidebook. It instructs soldiers to behave ethically towards civilians and avoid acts of revenge. So, in other words, and please take hold of this, whatever side of the debate you're on. When Israeli soldiers are guilty of acts of murder, in other words, they have no legitimate reason to do what they did, and they killed a Palestinian. If that is the case, then they are considered criminals for it. They are considered lawbreakers. And there have been national investigations. There have been protests where Israel was, where Israeli people felt that the leadership had wrong judgment or did things. When Ariel Sharon, people felt was guilty of opening the door for a massacre in Lebanon, was not directly responsible, but made wrong decisions. There were massive protests. There were large gatherings. Was it several hundred thousand people gathering to protest this, saying, well, it wasn't Israelis, it was Lebanese who died. It was Lebanese who died. But because Israel was involved and Israel did not protect them properly, those were the allegations, this brought national uproar and protest. Well, please tell me, in what is known as the West Bank today, Gaza, go ahead, call it occupied territory if you want. Please tell me where the national protests are and the marching down the streets when the Second Intifada took over 1,100 Israeli lives. Please tell me where the protests were. Please tell me where the protests are in Gaza when Hamas successfully kills Israeli civilians. It is night and day. There is a good versus evil here. So, IDF commanders and soldiers, I'm reading from an article in the Allgemeiner, allgemeiner.com, July 28th, IDF commanders and soldiers received operation-specific instructions on respecting the dignity of civilians, avoiding acts of revenge-driven violence, and other ethical issues. You know, it's hard if you see someone kill your partner in cold blood, and you see what happened, and they were set up to be murdered, and now you have the opportunity for revenge. It takes self-control to not carry that out. A report by Israel's Channel 2 on Sunday, so this was almost 2 weeks ago now, or 2 weeks ago, day 20 of Operation Protective Edge, revealed a booklet which details the goals of the operation and the appropriate way for soldiers to conduct themselves on the battlefield. The goal of the operation is, quote, to hurt terror infrastructure in the Gaza Strip, to minimize casualties among the Israeli home front while avoiding an escalation, all in an effort to improve the security reality in the south. The booklet aims, quote, to prepare the commander's soldiers for carrying out the mission in an optimal manner. Among the subjects covered is the use of military force against civilians, acts of looting, avoiding cruelty to detainees, ill use of social media, and even dealing with personal urges to carry out acts of revenge. The book contains questions like, how would you react if you witnessed an act of looting? Or does reporting on your friend turn you into a snitch? The text emphasizes that, quote, maintaining norms of ethical behavior is part of the professionalism demanded of IDF soldiers. Apart from the moral aspect and the potential to hurt the dignity of civilians, as well as the principle of purity, the purity of arms, instances of looting adversely affect the goals of the mission. As far as revenge, the booklet cautions. This is the IDF booklet before going into Gaza. Every person contains within them the urge to carry out acts of revenge, and this is natural. It is an urge especially hard to control when a soldier is in a situation where his comrade gets killed in front of his eyes. Revenge is not a military goal. The IDF is charged with the duty of defending the citizens of Israel and will carry out its mission professionally and determinedly, according to the orders of the diplomatic echelon and without succumbing to popular pressure. We take you behind the scenes right here on The Line of Fire. More to come today. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, I want to tell you about two great debates that you can get in your hands all this week. We will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Oh, a lot to cover and only a few minutes to do it. May I remind you again, may I strongly encourage you to be in prayer for our persecuted brothers and sisters around the world, for persecuted Christians, even for those who may not have a vibrant faith in Jesus, but Christianity is their historic faith, and they are suffering for it in unspeakable ways, in ways that we can't imagine. We need to be praying for God's grace. Remember, Peter was delivered from death. Jacob, James was killed, but then Peter was delivered. Why one killed, the other delivered? We don't know for sure, but we do know when the believers prayed, Peter was delivered. Pray for grace under fire. Pray for supernatural protection. Pray for courage to stand. Pray for the salvation of the persecutors. Pray that everything that Satan means for evil will be turned for good. Well, as I have been active on radio, in writing, and on social media, speaking out against terrorism in Israel's war with Hamas, standing with Israel while mourning the loss of Palestinian lives as well as Israeli lives, and encouraging others that the best solution for peace is to have a peace partner, not someone who wants to demolish and destroy Israel. As I have been standing for these issues, I've been coming under increasing attack on social media. So this is not attack in terms of anyone trying to do anything to me. It's just social media and other places. Lots of comments. We only spot afterwards because they're already blocked. We have a profanity filter on Facebook, for example. Other places, though, YouTube, I think some things get stopped, although some certainly don't. We'll spot them afterwards. And if you're wondering why do we allow certain comments, we're getting as many as 250,000 or 300,000 comments, social media comments, in a month's time now. We simply can't read all of them, keep up with all of them. But there's some really vile, ugly things coming from Muslims in different parts of the world. We know it by the names, and sometimes you can see the locations. Dr. Brown, it really doesn't surprise me how biased you are, and if you're a doctor, I must be Superman. Replace the word doctor with Zionist so things are clearer. The militants attacking Syria are from the same source, and support Israel is getting, which is USA and Zionism. If you claim to be a follower of Christ, then Mr. Know-It-All, you have your mixed fact up. I guess English is not the first language. They meant to say facts mixed up. You are not a doctor. These are all different ones. You are not a doctor because doctors save lives, and you're diminishing human lives to numbers and statistics. It's just a numbers game to you. You preach God's word, but you are pure evil. You're not even a true Christian. Yuck. Shame on you. They meant to say shame. Completely disgraceful. And then someone else, how'd this one come up? Homophobic, that one came in here too. Bigoted and basically a bad word for a prostitute. Just flooded with attacks like this. Doesn't seem to have done full research about how the Zionist Messiah will enslave the Christians. Here's another one calling me a private part. A completely irrational claptrap from an ill-informed buffoon. I may have shared a couple of these on the radio with you previously. Did he get the title doctor one day when he woke up from a drunk weekend? Stupid is, stupid does. Mr. Brown, this man is quite clearly insane. At the same time, ill-informed. More worryingly, some misguided people actually listen to him. Yeah, I read some of these on the air before. I've just got literally stacks and stacks and stacks of pages of these kinds of things. And by the way, this is not, I don't feel like I'm being, poor me. No, I'm just simply sharing what's out there. So let's just take one case in point. Earlier in the broadcast, I read from Chloe Valdry. I said Valdry, the way it was printed here, there was actually a line, an L at the end of her name, but it's Valdry, Chloe Valdry, to the Students for Justice in Palestine. This is a campus group, active campus group, a letter from an angry black woman. She said, "You do not have the right to invoke my people's struggle for your shoddy purposes." Well, how about we shoot down another myth? The evil Israelis and their checkpoints and not letting women through who are in labor trying to get to an Israeli hospital. And look at what they do. All right. JewishVirtualLibrary.org. Myth. Israeli checkpoints prevent Palestinians from receiving medical attention. Here are the facts. And I know so many people who've served in the IDF, and they will verify this. They will verify this. They will verify this. Israel has instituted checkpoints for one reason, to prevent Palestinian terrorists from infiltrating Israel. If the Palestinian Authority was fulfilling its roadmap obligations to dismantle the terrorist networks and disarm the terrorists, and its security forces were taking adequate measures to prevent Palestinians from planning and launching attacks, the checkpoints would be dismantled. Israel tries to balance its security concerns with the welfare of the Palestinians and is especially sensitive to the medical needs of Palestinians. According to IDF guidelines, any Palestinian in need of urgent medical care is allowed passage through checkpoints. The severity of the medical condition is determined by the checkpoint commander, who is to make decisions in favor of the Palestinian if there is any doubt. Palestinians are also allowed to enter Israel for routine medical care unless there is a security problem. Even then, Palestinians can appeal decisions and are also offered other options, such as transfer to neighboring states. Ambulances are still stopped in search at Israeli checkpoints because they have frequently been used as a means to transport terrorist bombs, and many of the murderers who have triggered suicide bombings in Israel gained access by driving or riding in Red Crescent ambulances. For example, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, just on one page, more. Examples, one after another, after another, after another, of terrorists entering through Red Crescent ambulances. So Israel has to check, but if someone is in medical need or women in labor, they do their best to rush them right through. Since its founding in 1996, Save a Child's Heart, an Israeli humanitarian group that treats children suffering from heart problems, has treated more than 900 children from Gaza. Isn't that something? Despite a number of cases where Palestinian terrorists tried to take advantage of the medical route to infiltrate Israel, more than 18,000 Palestinians from Gaza and 175,000 from the West Bank were allowed to travel to hospitals in Israel just in 2010. These are the facts, friends. All right, a tremendous opportunity for, yeah, I know, I'm excited about this. Two of the very best debates I've been involved with. One with my friend Rabbi Shmuley, who really killed Jesus. It was a classic debate, standing room only, New York City, Hilton, 1,000 people there, right before the Passion of the Christ movie came out, and a great debate at Southern Evangelical Seminary with my friend and colleague, Dr. James White, on Calvinism. I mean, come on, we lay it out as friends and colleagues. They're normally $20 each for the DVDs. This week, $25, postage paid for both, so you buy one, you get the other free with postage. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. Great tools, edifying, great for private church use. Jewish Outreach, 1-800-278-9978, or go to askdrbrown.org and order there. My bottom line today, if we'll major on the majors, major on truth and righteousness and justice, honor God, love Him, love our neighbor, we will be blessed.